Good morning. Today is Monday, October the 18th. Joining us, getting double teamed this morning. I mean, as long as you guys are going to be playing partners, and we'll do it this way. Jennifer Budwig from the second floor, Dan Haskins from the first floor at Redwood Capital Bank. Good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, man. You know, Jennifer was giving you all these clues and all these techniques, and she forgot to say where the microphone needs to be. Hang on.
Hang on. Yeah, right there. There you
all
go.
Right. Okay, fine.
Thanks, Brian.
Hey, all right.
Much better.
Now, I'm sure, Dan, she didn't tell you anything about the question of the day because she probably wants you to be the one to answer it.
Put our two brains together.
Okay, and come up with a third?
A half. Nope. Yeah. I'm more optimistic than you are.
Yes. All right. Here we go. Something that bankers probably are well known for. Why do we drink a toast?
Why do we drink a toast?
Yeah. Not toast. A toast. Yeah. Yeah.
I've got nothing.
Okay, two brains are coming up with no brain.
Not much better.
All right. The early Romans began the custom of putting a piece of burned toast into wine to reduce the wine's acidity and to improve its flavor. But it wasn't until the 18th century that the idea of drinking the toast itself came about. The idea supposedly arose out of an account by Richard Steele that appeared in publication in 1709. As the story goes, two young men who came upon a girl in a public bath were so taken by her beauty that one of them dipped a glass into the bath and drank to her charms. The other said, "Though I don't like the liquor, I will toast."
I'm pretty sure we never would
we'd
have
never have gotten that one.
That one.
You know, no. it's amazing how far down banker school education and curriculum has fallen these days. Oh, geez. So what are you guys hearing around town? It's like there's two separate sets of stories that I hear. One is jumping up and down with excitement because we've got Humboldt State. And the money's going in there. We've got the fiber optic stuff that's going over to the, I guess it's getting close to the Copeland facility. And then we've got the fish plant out on the spit and knocking down the old pulp mill, da-da-da-da-da. Then we got the other side that says, yeah, we can't find workers and there's no housing. So how are we going to solve this? You know, I think everybody knows Lou Quimby. And he says, you know, two truths can coexist simultaneously. What kind of read do you guys have on what's going on out there on the street right now?
Well, I think you nailed it as far as there's some really amazing, exciting things that are on the horizon. And I think from an economic standpoint, that's just really great stuff to hear. Always been a little bit concerned about as our cannabis industry declines a bit. Mainly from
levels out.
Yes, we'll just say levels out. And that money's no longer in our economy. What's going to come in and backfill it? So these different projects that you mentioned to me are wonderful things for our economy and for the future of the county. But yes, there is certainly the other piece in that in terms of the offset is the housing is going to continue to be an issue. Is our infrastructure set up for it? Is law enforcement set up for it? Are all of these groups that could be and will be impacted in going forward, are they talking, communicating, planning, and so forth? With the Polytech piece, of that $433 million grant they got, $110 million was specifically for housing, and they're going to be building 1,100 units to help with the housing piece because the enrollment is supposed to minimally double in 7 years. And so that's certainly going to impact our housing situation. But then we also have the state came out and mandated a couple years ago that there were a certain amount of units that every city and county had to build by 2027. And so our cities and our county has been working towards that. And each jurisdiction had to present a proposal to the state of California in terms of how they were going to meet that mandate. So they are working on different levels of increasing the housing.
Was part of that, Jennifer, the permitting process? the speeding up, the easing of, the understanding how to do it, waiving developer fees. I mean, all those things are happening in other counties and other jurisdictions, but they all seem to be very novel.
Yeah, I don't know that that necessarily has occurred a lot, maybe a bit, maybe a slight shift, but the piece in this is going to, I think, actually allow that to happen because building costs are so high right now that the developers who are doing this are getting grants and tax credits and so forth to help with the building of those.
So subsidies, basically.
Some subsidies, yeah, because it's just really difficult right now to build with construction costs being what they are and have projects actually pencil out. So there are programs out there that are available to assist with the housing that the state's mandating, which is what's going to allow it to happen. So there's some things that are in the works to help with our housing crisis because, I mean, we absolutely need it. And it's only, I'm not sure on the timing of all this, though. Like I said, the units are all supposed to be built out by 2027. And I think it's close to 10,000, if I remember correctly, as far as countywide.
Now, those are units?
Correct. So they have...
Not structures.
That would be units. That is correct. And so there's... and what they did was they kind of split it into four buckets. You had your very low-income housing, your low-income housing, your moderate, and your high. And the cities and county are focusing on the very low and low because the rest of it, they figured, is going to resolve itself, you know, because there's going to be people that are, you know, building homes and maybe duplexes and triplexes and so forth are already doing that, and that's going to help fulfill some of those particular areas on the higher end. But so their focus right now is the very low income and low income.
That sounds like the hope and pray theory of budgeting.
Yeah.
Dan, are you kind of sensing pretty much the same thing?
Yeah, I am. I've heard from some customers that, you know, if you want to start building, you know, units, you need to, it's like a 2-year process. So we need to start like right now in order to have units start being constructed 2 years from now.
Oh.
So we can't wait.
Joy. It's 8:19.
Join Warren Eckstein on KINS in the 6 o'clock hour as he explains pet behaviors, different fun facts, tips, and all sorts of info about your animals and the way they think and act.
Here are just some of the things that kids learn when they have pets in their life.
If you're an animal lover, this is absolutely the program you need to hear.
You know, vocalizations are a very important part of animal communication and their language. Hi, this is Warren Eckstein. Hear my daily pet tip weekdays on KINS FM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Jennifer Budwig and Dan Haskins from Redwood Capital Bank. So on the positive side, there seems to be a lot of stuff going on, but guys, we've identified housing as a significant infrastructure thing for years. I mean, you had the whole project, the Interceptor, that was done out in the Cutton area in anticipation of. We have all these, very, you know, the water plants are getting beefed up and expanded in anticipation of, okay. But if the building and the planning departments in the jurisdictions aren't becoming more project-focused, less process-focused, does it really matter what we're doing?
I think a lot of that is, you know, the developers willing to go the distance on it because you're definitely going to have hurdles along the way. And that's what...
Well, the expected ones, I think, they're baked into the process.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the unexpected ones.
This is the ones... you guys remember Arnie Herskovic, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Arnie used to talk about how much easier it was to develop out of Humboldt County than in, because you would be assigned somebody. And they would kind of hold your hand and walk you through the whole process. Even mm-hmm. if you were an ace, you had, you know, professional, you had one person to contact. Mm-hmm. That was your contact at the jurisdiction. And it wasn't whoever happened to walk up to the counter. So then you weren't getting different interpretations. And the state law was kind of constant. Instead of, well, Dan's got one impression, Jennifer, you've got another, and Winston's got another. And the poor developer is running in circles trying to satisfy now three different interpretations mm-hmm. instead of the one. And those are the types of structural things I think that a lot of us look at and hope have been addressed. You know, and I think that, you know, as the properties have higher value, yeah, you're going to get more sophisticated developers coming to town, obviously. But are they going to run into the challenges that we keep hearing about all the time? And that's the fear I have.
And it definitely does create a lot of problems with getting across the finish line, for sure. I remember there was this committee that I was part of in Fortuna. It was several years ago, and the city manager at the time was the one who put it together, and he was working really hard on trying to create an ombudsman program to do exactly that, where a person would come in, and it wasn't just housing for development, but it was across the board. He was really trying to get, you know, a strong economic base in Fortuna, so attracting businesses, getting housing built, and so forth. And
kind
so,
of a shepherd.
Yeah, and that was exactly right. So what the idea would be was roll out the red carpet. Someone comes in, and they start inquiring. It's roll out the red carpet and see how we can help them to get through the process. But the biggie was making sure that, you know, when that person came in to work on their project, what they did was they brought all the players to one table. You all had a conversation together. Everyone was on the same page when that person left. And you did have someone hold their hand the whole way through the process. So it was inviting them to, you know, come to the city of Fortuna, and whether, again, business, development, whatever that looked like, and trying to encourage that and support it through the process. So I just
make it as easy as possible.
Make it as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely other cities and counties out there have adopted that model. And I think it's because it sends a message that they want to have their businesses there, and or they want development and or building or housing. And, you know, that's significant. So I think that would be an incredible thing to have happen in our county, and would certainly attribute to that.
If that became the cultural norm. Mm-hmm. Instead of the exceptional, I think a lot of folks would probably feel a lot more comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. Dan, what are you hearing from businesses that are out there about biggest impediments now? Is it still labor?
Yeah, that is what I've been hearing, you know, quite a bit over the last year and a half. I think it's, you know, starting to change very recently. You know, the unemployment benefits kind of, you know, being looking forward to ending soon. So people are starting to think, you know, it's time to go back to work. And so I see it lessening, but I'm kind of an optimistic person as opposed to pessimistic, but I see it starting to lessen.
I'm really curious because there's a school of thought that if somebody was willing not to work because of the government benefits, is that really a good potential employee?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's kind of the tip of the iceberg of whatever the personality is. It's a tip of an iceberg and an indicator
mm-hmm.
in many situations.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, if it was daycare and going back to school, I mean, some of those types of circumstances. Okay. But somebody that just decided they'd rather not than do. Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about your labor pool, would that be a profile you would recommend, Jennifer?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. There's going to be a mixed bag, right? And so a lot of it's dependent upon why they opted not to work for that year and a half. And so there has the daycare issue is a very real issue. And with schools out and a lot of people being forced to decide, am I going to continue with my job or do I need to stay home and, you know, take care of my child and basically homeschool them? It doesn't end up being a choice. You know, you pretty much have to do it. And so if I've got an applicant who is a mom who has taken a year and a half off work to have to be home with her child to help them get through school, that's a very different situation than, you know, somebody who just was kind of like, well, I made a lot more money sitting at home than I would have if I worked. And so, you know, those are two different scenarios. So I think it's kind of peeling the onion back a little bit to understand it.
Red, yellow, or white?
Green. Red.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Dan Haskins and Jennifer Budwig from Redwood Capital Bank. We hear a lot of, I guess, references to a lot of different economic things that have come out of the state, come out of the feds, and I guess to a certain level, local cities also, primarily the state and the Fed about this forgiveness, that grant, da-da-da-da. How do you keep it all together? How do you know what's going on so that you can either advise people or help them go through that the process after letting them know what's going on? Because there's all this stuff going on. How do you guys keep it straight?
Well, it's difficult. Good, very good question. And I would say, you know, we can't keep it all that knowledge in our own brain. We have places like the Small Business Development Center, you know, that have data banks and so forth that keep all that information together. Of course, we talk amongst ourselves, keep ourselves informed as possible. So it is quite difficult.
Is there any time, Dan, when you would not recommend a local business to take advantage of some of these opportunities?
It's their decision, of course. I guess the key is getting as much information as possible, to make an informed decision. But, you know, we'd have to let them make their own decision between them and their accountant, I suppose.
Funny, you talk to the accountant, you say, well, between you and your banker.
Yeah.
Jennifer, you're kind of up a little bit at a higher elevation on this stuff. Do you see that it isn't wise for some businesses to take advantage of these long-term fixed low-rate opportunities that are out there?
I think Dan hit the nail on the head. The bottom line is making sure...
There's a lot of nails being hit around here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just making sure you fully understand the program, everything about it, and so that you can go in with an informed decision. I think there's been some really great programs out there that have provided really wonderful opportunities for businesses, and some have just actually kind of saved the businesses because of providing them the additional funds that they've needed to get through the whole COVID challenge. I haven't really seen any so far that have had problems that were unforeseen on the front end, but yeah, if you can learn everything you know or that's out there to be learned about the program, and you weigh it out, and the positives are going to outweigh the any negatives, then yeah, absolutely take advantage of it. And I think that Dan, when he mentioned Small Business Development Center, super great resource to understand what types of programs are out there. They're staying really on top of it. We're part of their regular newsletter that they submit out very regularly that does provide summaries of the programs, but they're really keeping a very close eye on all these different ones that are, because there's so many.
Well, and it's not like it's a one-sheeter.
Mm-mm, at all.
It's like success is measured by the pound. Some of these are very successful programs. Hey, you just kind of look at it and you wonder, you know, for those businesses, and particularly if they're targeted at small business, we don't have staff lawyers to go through this stuff. You know, we might have a CPA. We have our banker and kind of throw it on your guys' desk and say, oh, what does this mean? You know, and that's kind of what I was getting to, because there's a lot of us that just aren't sophisticated in these areas and don't even know the terminologies in a lot of the documentation that's being put forth.
And eligibility is a big piece of it, too. And I think that's where SVDC can kind of help wade through some of those things, because, you know, some are local, some are state, some are, you know, it goes on and on. And so then some are for nonprofits only, some are for profits only, some are, you know, some require repayment, some are grants. And so just, again, fully understanding the program itself.
Dan, prior to this last couple of years, were there a number of these programs that were available and we just weren't aware of them because they didn't get publicized? Or is this kind of like a new creature that's out there?
I'd say it's mostly a new creature. I mean, I'm sure there were some. But the ones that we've been dealing with sort of traditionally would be Small Business Administration, SBA programs, 7A, 504s, you know, for real estate, starting a business, purchasing a business. Those are kind of the more traditional ones, I think, that we've been, you know, used to dealing with over recent years.
So this is a layering on top of that.
Yeah. I'd say generally.
For businesses,
And again, the PPP program was a great success. Got a lot of businesses through that, you know, unknown territory.
The vice? Now, there's the forgiveness program on those also. Was forgiven. The second one is still out there lingering because I guess there's a deadline at the end of the year or something like that. But the rules have kind of changed in midstream on these things, too. How do you tell your folks, or what do you tell your folks, to pay attention to as the rules and the conditions after the loan was given, or grant, I guess, depending on what the program is, that things have changed in midstream? How do you deal with that one?
Well, the forgiveness process has actually gotten much simpler, I'd say, as we've understood it and then as the SBA has kind of set up, you know, direct forgiveness application processes. So it's actually, I think, become much simpler through the second round than it was through the first round.
The first round was they were kind of making the baby. That didn't make sense.
Building the
as they were baking the
we were
cake, things changed, yes. KINS, I was doing baking yesterday. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:40.
Hey, folks, flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Jennifer Budwig and Dan Haskins. Guys, for folks, for businesses that are looking either to go from an idea to actually opening the door, or for those businesses that are looking to expand, is this a good environment to do that right now, or would you, in broad strokes, generally recommend that you might want to do an additional layer of research to make sure that things are have more confidence, that things are going to be better in the niche that you've chosen? Because I would think Humboldt State, expansion, more kids, more staff, more people, hooray, more demand in the market. Let's go do Well, maybe you want to wait a year and make sure that those people show up, that everything's on the proper timeline, that there isn't something else going on with the local economy that's going to kneecap your idea. How do you recommend timing for businesses?
So there's a lot of things with that. I think a lot of it also is dependent upon your industry you're looking at, because some industries, we look at over the last couple of years and with COVID and so forth, some industries have just very much thrived. and looking at, okay, do you need a storefront? What's available? We do have a lot of space available.
Anything you want. Yeah.
There is a lot available out there right now. I think it's just dependent upon what your particular situation is and your availability of resources. Is it a situation where you've been working on this idea for a year or two and you're ready to bring it to fruition? Maybe you've got investors, you're ready to pull the trigger. Everything looks good timing, dependent upon what your business plan is. Then something like that, it would probably make sense to move forward under the presumption it looks feasible. Versus you just thought of this idea in the shower this morning and you're like, okay, this sounds like a really great idea. So you probably wouldn't want to
do
that tomorrow.
Do you have people doing it that quickly? Hey, for the last week I've been thinking and I did a little bit of research and here's where I am. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, we get the whole spectrum. We get some that have been working on it for years. We have some who have been working on it for a very short period of time. But I think that's where SBDC comes into play again, the Small Business Development Center, because they have some amazing counselors down there, folks that can provide one-on-one counseling for you to help with that, as well as they have classes. They can help vet
slow,
a lot of
slow
that.
Down, Tiger.
Yeah, exactly. And if that's what's needed, you know, they've got counselors that have a lot of experience that can certainly help with that.
It's kind of interesting because, what is it? Paralysis by analysis. Okay, I mean, you wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and try to be totally risk-free. And that runs so counter to most of the entrepreneurial spirit that's out there. It's like, I see the opportunities, you know, carpe diem, right? Let's go. And let's see how it plays out. Somewhere in between is probably where you guys want it to be, because you want the opportunity still to be alive and valid, but to go off half-cocked probably isn't the best way to maintain the return on portfolio that you're looking for.
Yeah, and typically a bank isn't going to start or finance a startup just because of the inherent risk involved with that. That's normally REDEC and AEDC. Are kind of a little more geared towards
that. So you'd rather
that.
Have somebody buy a business that might be on decline, but they see an opportunity?
I would say that through the SBA 7A program that Dan has already talked about, that would be something where we could certainly take a look at it. If it's on the decline, you have to fully understand why. And if they're thinking they can come in and turn that business around, can they really do it? Is it feasible? Does it make
20
sense?
Hours a week, I can do it.
What's that saying? As a business owner, you only have to work half days. You just pick any 12 hours you want.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to clean the cobwebs off the walls, right? biggest takeaway from this year so far, what would it be for each of you?
That's another good question. I think, you know, the ship is turning around. You know, last year's passed. We're looking forward now. This is 2021 going into 2022. Let's be optimistic. There's lots of reasons for it, I say, for optimism, especially in Humboldt County, the things you've already listed, even, you know, separate from national economics. We have our own here, and things are so positive for the future.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to be in a micro environment now. For the economy rather than in the past, you know, we've missed out on so much. Mm-hmm. How about for you?
I just reflecting over the last year and a half, I'm just so impressed and amazed at how resilient our businesses are, business owners, and just people in general. People have really had to challenge themselves to think outside the box and come up with creative ways to do business. And a lot of them have just rethought their business in general, and in moving forward are probably going to do things a little differently, and it's just kind of amazing to see.
Yeah, the flexibility people. And creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Keeps things dynamic, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Particularly when you're striving for consistency. See, Dan, you survived. You made it through, bud.
Yeah, you said I could, and you're right. Thank you, Jennifer.
See everybody tomorrow.